My name's Jonathan Larson. I'm born and raised in Dillingham. I'm 25 years old.
Do you go by JJ?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you prefer that?
Yeah.
Okay. JJ, it's good to talk to you today here. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So we want to be very honest about where you're at right now, because you're at a crucial step where you are now sober, but you're at the very beginning stage of this. Can you just describe where you're at sort of in this journey?
So I'm 4 months sober now, and, you know, I'm just starting to understand what it is to be sober and building a life in sobriety. It's been somewhat of a struggle. I've been home for over a month now, and, you know, the first week was a little tough, but the important thing for me was to, you know, see what I can do for my community, a part of this, you know, that's what this is. And, you know, I kind of explained it to someone last night. It's like I'm taking the first necessary steps on a journey that I've chosen to take, and I could kind of see the, you know, where it can lead to.
You're looking through the tunnel.
Yeah.
There's a light down there.
Yeah, exactly. Something that I never seen before.
Right.
You know, and it hasn't been easy, I'll say that. You know, it's been hard work. When I was in Seattle, that's where I started getting sober and okay. Went to treatment and for 3 months. And I learned a lot down there and worked hard. You know, I did a lot of things I was uncomfortable with, things I didn't want to do, but I knew would benefit me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was important to learn that down there and come back and instead of, you know, keeping that to myself, sharing it with my community.
All right. So we'll come to that treatment aspect in a minute and ask how you got to that point and what support you had to get down there and everything. But can you share what led up to that? Can you share where the struggle began and sort of what happened?
Well, I started drinking and smoking weed at around 10, you know, a little bit before and a little bit after. And mostly it was when my mom died. I kind of just didn't want to deal with the pain and emotions that came with that. So I used alcohol and marijuana to, you know, hide that. And, you know, I had a lot of fun with it also. You know, it wasn't just bad times. And I was one of those people that said I'd never do hard drugs. Mm-hmm. And eventually I got to the point where I was doing prescription pills and cocaine, and that was around my senior year in high school.
Okay.
I had done pills before that, but not a lot. And then my brother passed away when I was 19, and that's and also my best friend 6 months later, and that's when the addiction really started to take a strong hold with me. And I was doing prescription pills, Oxycontin, and cocaine, and, you know, for a long time, that's all I did. That's all I cared about. And, you know, I had went to college at UAA, and, you know, I went to class for maybe 3 months, not even like a month and a half. And it got to the point where the drugs became more important, and I didn't even want to go to class anymore, and I stopped completely. And that's after a few years of that. You know, the pills just weren't enough anymore, and they got too expensive, and that's when I started doing heroin. And, you know, it just started out with a little here and a little there, and eventually got to the point where it was, like, with the pills and whatnot is where it was all I cared about. And, you know, no matter what happened in my life, like, I had my son, you know, and, you know, that wasn't enough to get me to stop seeing my son be born. You know, it got me through for a little while, you know, to stay sober. You know, my family asking me to get sober, and that would keep me going for a little while, you know. But it got to the point where I lost my girlfriend also, you know, and that still wasn't enough to get me to stop. And we'd gotten back together after a while, you know, thought things would change, and it didn't. You know, I stayed the same. I, you know, was just putting on a, I put it in this way, it was like I was pretending, you know, to do what people wanted me to do. And on the inside, I was dying, you know. And so I, you know, I just get periods of sobriety, you know, weeks, maybe a month. And then, you know, that it finally just break and go for it. And I'd always tell myself, you know, I'll just try it once. And I might, you know, do it one day and then a few days later try it again. And then within a few weeks, I'd be doing it every day and getting to the point where, if I don't have it, I'm in withdrawal, and I'm telling myself I need it, you know, because I'm hurting. And so,
can I ask you about that? I have heard that some of the young people who get involved in maybe the heroin or other drugs, they come back later and say they didn't know how addictive it might be and how much of their life would change almost immediately. Did you experience that, and were you aware it might be that way?
I kind of knew about how addictive it was. For me, it was the pills that I didn't know how addictive they were, and, you know, the prescription opioids, they're essentially heroin handed out by a doctor, you know?
Right.
And so that's, you know, where the not knowing came in for me. And then, you know, I kind of knew how addictive heroin was. You know, it's, I didn't have a lot of knowledge on it, but definitely once I started using it, it was like, kind of fell in love with it, right, at first. And then it just, it went downhill very fast.
Mm.
It wasn't like I was able to maintain a lifestyle on it for a while. I was constantly, you know, lying to my family and my friends. Mm. And you know, what money I did have went to it. Bills weren't being paid. And eventually got to the point where I was, you know, stealing from family, you know, lying about what I needed money for, borrowing money to pay bills, and then yet those bills weren't paid, you know. When,
which years before you never would have imagined about yourself, I would guess.
No, definitely not. You know, I kind of touched on it the other day, how when I was at the LAO for the public testimony for mm-hmm. the Senate Bill 79, I kind of touched on it. You know, when I took that first pill, never would I imagine that it would lead me to a heroin habit that would essentially, you know, it was very close to taking my life. I also don't want to, like, take away any personal responsibility. You know, it's choices I made in my life. You know, I didn't want to deal with what was at hand, or it was the easier way to go about things, you know, rather than, you know, buckle down and do the hard thing, you know, even though it was right. I chose the easy way out for a long time, and the easier way was to, you know, get drunk or get high and not deal with what was going on. And that led to, you know, building debts with people around the community, my family, some businesses, and
was there a rock bottom point, or was what happened? What changed that you said, "I'm going to change myself"?
Well, I had gotten to the point where, you know, I wanted to quit, and I tried, and some friends, you know, I'd be sober for a little while, maybe something came up and there was something around, and it's like, well, I'll just try it. Like I said, you know, I'll try it once, and then it was not like that. And then it was on New Year's this year, New Year's Eve, my son had hurt his arm and was at the hospital. And, you know, as I was sitting there, the more important thing was drugs to me. You know, even though my son's at the hospital hurting, you know, it was what was on my mind was, you know, how I was going to get my next fix. And after, you know, my son had gotten seen and been taken care of, I started thinking about that and everything else leading up to that. You know, I'd lost my girlfriend. I had lost the trust of my family. You know, they had been for years trying to, you know, confronting me on it. And, you know, they knew I couldn't, like, they couldn't do it for me. So they'd, you know, come to me and say, I know that you need to do this for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, figure out, you know, you got to get something going on here and get clean. And mm-hmm. but they also didn't understand, you know, because they're not addicts. So, like, they wouldn't understand, like, why I would get sober for a while and then go back to it. And, you know, I had no money. I had no fuel in my fuel tank. I had no money to pay my electricity bill. I had absolutely nothing. And, I mean, I had material things, but, you know, maybe, like, today, if I had stayed in that path, maybe today those things would be gone. You know, like, I'm pretty sure my family was close to considering getting my son from me, you know, and taking him away from me, which I understood, you know. Looking back now, I understand why. And, you know, just putting up this front and behind all of it was, it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like you put up a wall and it's, you know, on the outside, everything looks amazing, but behind it, it's just chaos and mess. Mm. And everything's falling, you know, everything's just being destroyed.
You wanted better for yourself. Your family wanted better for you. How did you take the leap, and what happened? Where did you go?
I woke up one morning and, you know, I was tired of living that lifestyle of every day waking up sick and wondering how I was going to be okay that day, how I was going to find money to be okay, or even if I had money, if I could find anything to be okay, right? And I went online and looked up this addiction hotline number, called it, and got some information about the, you know, treatment centers and insurance. You know, I was informed that I need to figure out what insurance I have, and I was very fortunate that my stepmom has a great insurance company that they gave me an extension, and I was able to get covered through them to go to treatment in Seattle, which you know, it's very, I think that's another thing that's very important in this story, is that I was one of the fortunate people to have that insurance to cover the treatment, you know, the cost of it, because it was a 28-day treatment center that cost around $12,000. Had I not had insurance, you know. So there's a lot of people out there that aren't as fortunate as I am, you know, to have that. And I think that's another, you know, thing that's very unfortunate, that, you know, it's so expensive to get that treatment. And so I was very fortunate to have that insurance to, you know, cover it. And, you know, they got me on a plane that same day. Or I waited a couple days to get my extension on the insurance and get things squared away. And then once I was told I was covered and I found a treatment center that, you know, the insurance company gave me 3 treatment centers to look at, and I found one I wanted to go to. And for me, I didn't really investigate into the treatment centers, really. I just wanted to go right away before my mind changed, you know. My mind, I'm one of those people that, you know, it was hard to make up his mind, and when I want to do something, I better do it now rather than later.
So it wasn't like shopping for colleges or something. You found one that would work, and the important thing was, do it now.
Yeah.
All right.
Do it right away, because, you know, looking back, had I waited, you know, they put me on a flight that night. You know, once I was told I would be covered to go to the treatment center, I was on a flight 2 hours later. And I actually was hoping I wouldn't go till the next day. And looking back, I'm glad I went then, because I was ready to go. You know, had I waited another day, maybe, you know, I might have backed out of it or something. And, mm-hmm. So I went to a treatment center in Seattle, yeah, for 28-day treatment center.
When was this? This was in?
January.
Okay. And describe your experience there.
It was great.
You said it was tough, but it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't, it wasn't the best facility, but they had really great people that worked there. You could tell they cared about, helping people that are in my position, addicts and alcoholics that are trying to recover from addiction and alcoholism. And
so what's the, when people look at recovery options, there's things like methadone, there's things like trying to go cold turkey, there's things like treatment. What was the philosophy behind this treatment idea, and why has it worked so far for you?
Well, they stressed no mind-altering substances. So they, if at all possible, they wouldn't, give out Suboxone or methadone. You would go in for a detox period where you'd see the doctor every few hours. They'd check up on you, make sure you're not gonna have any medical emergency.
Sure.
And I was in pain. I was, or not pain, but I was very uncomfortable. I wanted to get something, and they they knew I didn't need it. I just wanted it and gave me as little as possible, like something to help me sleep.
Sure.
Maybe some ibuprofen, said teeth that hurt me. And I think that was very important to stress, not using anything to get off of it, because my mentality was, I've tried to do it on my own. We're using something like maybe marijuana to get clean from harder drugs like heroin, and meth. And it didn't work for me. It was just something else. Like, I was switching drugs. Like, even I'd drink, for a while just to, get over being sick from the withdrawals of heroin. And I think it was important to not use anything, because that, like Suboxone, methadone, stuff like that, you're going to have withdrawal symptoms from those also. If you're, and they're very addictive too, and I don't want to, anyone that is doing it that way, that's great. If you're going through doctors or methadone clinic, whatever, however you're doing it, and you're doing it to get yourself off, that's amazing. However you do it, it doesn't really matter. But I think getting to the point where you're not on anything, that was what was important for me. Is my, since I was 10 years old, I wanted to be high on something. And now, instead of, like, one thing that I've been going through recently is, like, I would always have to do something, like, smoke weed or get drunk or maybe heroin before I could do anything. So, like, I'm getting to the point now where, like, I have to get myself motivated to do things.
Without it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's not easy, it's tough, but at the same time, it's worth it, I'm finally starting to feel that, a little bit of that drive, like waking up and, being able to go throughout my day. I mean, I'm not by any means doing amazing things. I'm just trying to do something.
You left in January to begin this treatment feeling at a very low point in your life. When you walked out 28 days later and you were on your way to the airport or wherever, did you have a new sense, a new lease on life? Did you have hope that you would be okay?
Yeah. And the most important thing for me getting out of, because this is an inpatient treatment center where you're there all day long, every day. And the most important thing coming out of there was not flying home immediately. I had the option of flying home, coming here right away. Instead, what I did was I went to an outpatient treatment center, which was 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for a month, and went to a sober living home.
Okay.
And stayed in a sober house where they, they piss test you.
Sure.
They, keep an eye on you, make sure you're not using, and you have other people that are trying to recover also, people that you can relate to and help, you can all kind of help each other stay on that path, and there, you know, staying in that place, there was people that would use and get kicked out, and I think it was unfortunate to see that, but for me it was a lesson, you know, what would happen have I done it. And I stayed there for 2 months and went through outpatient treatment for those 2 months, and that was very important for this beginning of the
path. You didn't want to be right back here just yet.
Well, I did. I did want to come back.
Okay.
But I understood from, you know, working with my counselors at the treatment center and learning on other people's experiences, you know, these counselors have worked with hundreds of people, you know, and seen, like, going right back to that environment that you were using in is, it can work, you know, but more often than not, it doesn't. And so learning through people that have seen it happen, it gave me the strength to stay down there for a while and learn. Because the sober house I went to, you know, it wasn't, they're not telling you what to do. They just give you a safe place to live.
Interesting.
Really is what it was. And so I was able to make my own decisions, you know, do what I wanted to do throughout the day. And
with a little bit of supervision to make sure that a little bit of accountability.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. You know, in the inpatient treatment center, you know, you're there all day.
Right.
You wake up, they tell you to do this. You know, they have a schedule throughout the whole day, you know, of what to do. So your day is planned out before you, you know, even wake up.
Right.
And so going to the sober house, it was important to be accountable to myself with that little bit of accountability from the house, you know, on. They'd piss test you, or if you're acting erratic or anything like that, or, you know, doing things that you shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was important to get that self-reliance, a little bit of that self-reliance outside of here.
Mm-hmm.
And not running right back to where I was, you know, before, learning to stay sober on my own with a little bit of help.
One thing we hear about is that young people who get hooked into an addiction have experienced some pain in life that maybe that sort of centered around. You mentioned your mom died. Did you get the sense from other people you met down there that this was part of a pattern, that something had impacted their life early on that either pushed them towards an addiction or didn't help prepare them to guard against it or something?
Yeah, there is a lot of people, you know, that have gone through a lot of childhood trauma or had a lot of stress in their lives, but there is also people who, you know, had great lives.
Hmm.
You know, they had a great family, great parents. Like I had, you know, my mom dying when I was 9, you know, that was tragic, but I also had a father that was an amazing parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't. And there's people that, you know, they have both their parents, they lived in a great neighborhood, and, you know, you could definitely see a lot of people that had been through childhood traumas or had, you know, tragic things happen in their lives that, like as you said, didn't, when those times came and the addiction started or whatever, they weren't as prepared to defend from it maybe, or it was easier to get into it, but... You know, it also touches everybody, I think. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what you got going on for you in life. You know, you make the choice to, you know, use that drug once. That can be the start of an addiction.
Right.
Yeah.
You're back in town now. You're at the start of this journey, but you're standing up to say this is possible, this is doable. You're not saying your work is done yet, but you're at this point. What's next for you? What do you need to do to keep things going well, and what are you up to?
I've been trying to get ready for fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, you know, is giving back to my community. I really believe the heroin and epidemic is real here, and there's a lot of people that are affected by it either directly or indirectly, as, you know, family or friends. And I think the most important thing to do is talk about it and find solutions, things we can do to, you know, change what's going on. Because I think as a community, we kind of have this idea of keeping our problems to ourselves and not talking about what's going on. And I think that doesn't help at all. I actually think it hurts it, you know, because it allows it to continue. But for me, sharing my experience and doing what I can to help, you know, anyone that's in need, you know, if someone, like with this situation here, I've told myself, if anyone asks me about what's going on, I'll tell them. And if I'm asked to do anything that's regarding it, I'll do my best to do it like this. I mean, I didn't really want to do something like this before, but realizing this, my story and what I'm going through can help other people, is important to me to do what I can. I think people coming together and, you know, whether you're an addict or a family member an addict, talking about it with other people that are going through the same things, and, you know, maybe what worked for you and what worked for them, what didn't work, you know, just having a conversation is the start of finding a solution, right? If we're not talking about it, we can't figure out how to, you know, come up with a solution.
I think a lot of people would agree with you, and I've watched the struggle for those solutions over the past couple of years. A lot of good intention is having a hard time connect with good solutions, I think, in our communities out here. One more question for you, which is, if we have younger listeners out there who are in those very vulnerable years, what's your advice to them? What do you tell them? You know sort of what some of them might be going through or whatever. What do you tell them?
I think, you know, if you're having a hard time, you know, troubles at home, troubles with friends, any kind of hard times going through your life, you know, instead of bottling it up and keeping it inside, find someone that you can talk to about it. You know, there's one thing I never did was talked about what I was going through. I held everything inside, and when those emotions or that pain came up, it was much easier to turn to drugs and alcohol. And so, you know, finding somebody you can express your emotions to, you know, talk about what's going on in your life. And then also, you know, peer pressure is a big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was something for me, is I always wanted to be cool. I always wanted to be part of the in crowd. And, you know, drinking mm-hmm. allowed me to do that. And I think if you're drinking to be, you know, or using drugs to be friends with somebody or to, you know, get closer to someone, you know, it's not something that you want to get into, because though it may work in the beginning, you know, getting you what you want in the beginning, most likely for me, all those things went away further down the road, mm-hmm. you know, because I started this relationship based on, you know, something I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, be yourself. I think, you know, don't be afraid to be yourself, no matter what that is. You know, I'm kind of a weird person. I do weird things, and I used to be ashamed of that. And, you know, as I'm starting to be sober and realize who I am, I think not being ashamed of who I am is important, you know, because I think it's important for people to be who they are, no matter what that is.
J.J. Larson, we commend you for being who you are, for standing up to share your story, which I know is not easy. Proud to hear of your success, and we wish you the best. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave.